Welcome to Chit Chat Money. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer interview industry experts and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Money is a CCM Media Group podcast. Ryan and Brett are also general partners at Arch Capital, and Arch Capital may have positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Money by Ryan or Brett or any other podcast guests is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome in. This is the Tuesday Not So Deep Dive episode on Chit Chat Money. Today we're going to be discussing Squarespace. One second as I change to gallery. Yep, we're in gallery view. Okay, we are talking Squarespace. The third stock in our website in e-commerce month. This is another website builder similar to GoDaddy, but without the domain stuff. And it's going to be very similar to Wix. They're extremely similar businesses, and we'll be covering Wix as the last episode in this month. We're going to talk about them today, go through all the basics on our Not So Deep Dive episodes. We try to go for about 45 minutes, cover the basics of what a business does, their financials, their ownership structure, any sort of quirks, what we liked, disliked, and then come to any sort of conclusions if we're more interested in the company. Before we talk about them, housekeeping items. One, subscribe to the newsletter that goes along with each of these episodes. The link will be in the show notes. It can be very helpful. You get the show notes with all these. You'll get some charts, any sort of tables we referenced throughout the episode, which I can guarantee you we're going to reference a couple of times, at least in this episode. And then second, if you like the episode, please give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to help the show. All right, we're going to get started. But first, let's talk about our sponsor today, and that is 7 Investing. Anyone that's listened to the show knows 7 Investing by now. As we're getting close to the end of 2022, there's a limited time left to take advantage of 1, our code, and 2, their free trial. So if you use our code money, you get 2 things as of this moment. 1, a 7-day free trial to try out the service risk-free. You have to check out the research reports, all the ones that they've done so far. You're not going to be, because they have so much information and stuff behind their paywall, you're not going to get to everything. So don't think you're just going to be able to cheat, research everything, and then leave after 7 days. But you get to try it out.
If you were really motivated.
Well, yes. If you were extremely motivated, possibly. But I don't think it is humanly possible. So you get to check it out for free with a 7-day free trial. And if you want to stick around and use and get an annual subscription, you can use our code money. Get $100 off your annual subscription for life. With a subscription to 7 Investing, you get research reports each month. 7 research reports, as the name 7 Investing implies. You get deep dive videos and reports from each advisor, as there are 7 lead advisors on the team. You get updates from all across the team in various ways. And you can contact them through their Discord, subscriber calls, and all the good stuff. So they can help you move along on your investing journey. So yeah, use code money, check them out, get that free trial. And now let's move into Squarespace. So Ryan, what does Squarespace do? And give a little history of the company.
Yeah, the history is actually pretty interesting. So I know I've given some boring history on some of the companies that we've done recently, but Squarespace there was a lot of color, a lot of context. So I'm excited to talk about that. But as for the business, the first line on the 10K, I always love looking at it because sometimes it's super vague, like just way too vague, you know, just a really broad mission statement. But Squarespace is okay. It says Squarespace is an all-in-one platform with everything to sell anything. It's still fairly vague, but basically it's a platform that allows, and I'm going to try to approach this as if someone's never heard of Squarespace or Wix or is not that well versed in the CMS space. So if you are familiar, I'm sorry for more of the basic layout, but Squarespace is a platform that allows all kinds of users to establish a professional looking internet presence and operate their business online. So when you're thinking about like the popular Squarespace customer groups, you're probably thinking, selling online must compete with Shopify, but there's a lot more. Not every business is trying to sell something, or not every business is trying to ship items. Where Squarespace really finds a lot of customers in like the restaurant industry, the photography, wedding planning, bloggers, artists. It serves as a portfolio for a lot of fields. So if you think about like, if you're an interior designer and you've got a portfolio that you want to showcase, Squarespace is kind of a really ideal place to do that. It really got its start in blogging too. So that's probably one of the more common use cases that people use Squarespace for. However, Substack has kind of gone after that market as well. But anyway, it applies to a lot of fields, pretty much anything. Some of it probably lends itself a little better to, like the use cases I talked about. But in terms of the customer journey, when a user comes to Squarespace, it's basically you can immediately start assembling the website you want with this sort of drag and drop canvas. And then they have 100 plus templates that allow you to kind of get an easier start. And so let's say you are a photographer. They've had so many use cases with that they've built these templates that you can easily replicate and then adjust it or customize it for your own needs. So if you want different colors or you want slightly different layout, different logo in the corner, you can adjust it to your own desires. But really, you're probably going to have something similar to a lot of other photographers. So the templates certainly help. And I think they really help in terms of converting someone who's just exploring how to build a website to, okay, I might actually buy this, because it kind of gets them over that hump. And then at the end, once you've kind of established the website you want, and it's an iterative process, so you can keep going in and keep refreshing and updating it. It's not like you set it and forget it. But at the end, you'll get hit with basically a subscription price that says, we will do your hosting services. And if you go listen to the GoDaddy episode, we talked about what the hosting services require. That's storing all your data on co-location servers somewhere, allowing your website to actually run, and then offering you a domain that you want, and as well as security. They'll offer you that for the pricing changes constantly. It's very dynamic, but it's 1 year, 2 year, 3 year contracts for, let's say, $100, $200. They're constantly running discounts, so it changes. Right now, their average revenue per unique subscription is right over $200. So they'll provide the hosting services to you for that kind of subscription cost. Beyond that, though, Squarespace also offers some tools or solutions that are meant to actually help businesses run. So you can get custom domain emails. A lot of businesses like to use that. They have a plugin, or they distribute basically G Suite and Google custom domains. And then they have a variety of add-ons as well. So things like this isn't even necessarily an add-on, but it allows you to manage your social media accounts. It allows you to sell online. Doesn't have its own payment solution, but it has payment partners. So that's kind of a difference between them and Wix. You can schedule and take appointments. You can send out email campaigns. There's tons more that you're able to do if you're a business on here. One of the big ones is Talk, which is T-O-C-K. If you're a restaurant, it allows you to book reservations and process online orders as well. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But basically, this is just allowing you to easily set up and run your business online. That's the goal of Squarespace, and it gets grouped into the software as a service content management system, so SaaS CMS. And really, it's very similar to Wix, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the history, like I said, it's kind of a remarkable founding story. So Squarespace was founded in 2003 by Anthony Casalina, I believe I'm saying that correctly, out of his dorm room at the University of Maryland. So at the time, And I went and listened to How I Built This episode with him on it, and he gives a really good story about how he built this. And he wanted to make his own blog and realized there wasn't really an intuitive solution to kind of get set up without writing your own code. And so I believe he originally, when people would ask him what he did or what Squarespace was, he called it a publishing software, which I guess it still is today. But he wanted to build his own sort of publishing software, and that's what he did. I believe this was his early years in college. One of his friends just said, like, I'll give you $200 for this. And he said, wow, you know, all right, this could actually, now that I think about it, this could be a business. And so he ended up having to get some space in some server rooms in New York. He got a $30,000 loan from his dad to kind of try to turn this into a real company and plow some money into marketing. And for the first several years, even after college. At one point, I believe this was doing, at the time, it was like $650,000 in revenue. And he was still the only person at the company. He would write all the code, answer all customer questions. He'd run marketing for Google AdWords. I mean, he was doing everything. And he talked about having to constantly, he wasn't making any progress on the platform was his big thing. He was doing all these sort of menial tasks. And so he ended up hiring this different CEO. And quickly he realized that it wasn't going to work and that he wanted to run things his own way. And there was a lot of disagreements around different decisions. And he was even asked in the interview, you know, did it kind of work? He said, no, not at all. I wanted to run this thing myself. And around that time, this was 2010, Anthony went out and they actually got an acquisition offer from Getty Images to buy out Squarespace, but he wanted to keep running the company. And so someone else said, hey, we'll give you some money. Excel and Index Ventures said, how about we invest some money in you? And then, you know, it's still yours. And so that's what he did. He raised $38.5 million funding round from those two companies and really began building the business the way he wanted. And since then it's been kind of the typical VC route, I guess you could say. He obviously still retains a lot of ownership, which Brett will talk about in a second, but they kind of went the typical CMS path, which is you start with a good website building solution, and then you start to build business tools. And a lot of this was through acquisitions. So they've made, I want to say, 5 acquisitions in like the last 5 years. It might be 4, but they acquired Acuity Scheduling, Unfold, Talk, which was the big one, which I'll talk about at the end. And it's basically gone from this evolution of trying to be a blogging site to applying to any sort of business vertical, to being mobile friendly, to now being a full blown commerce solution that allows companies to really sell online. So that's kind of been the evolution. They didn't actually go public until March of last year. They did take on some debt before they joined the public markets, which I'll talk about in a sec. But they've now been public for a little over a year.
All right. Yeah. Let me hit industry and competition. It'll be similar to GoDaddy, but slightly different. So if we look at the website builder market, it is quite small, excluding WordPress, which we hit on a little bit more during the GoDaddy episode, a little bit more of the details there, but I'm sure we're going to discuss that today. So excluding WordPress, which has the majority market share, there are only a few billion dollars spent on building websites each year. Squarespace is one of these as a non-WordPress website builder like Shopify, GoDaddy, Wix, BigCommerce, a few others. There are also a lot of products that they offer to customers that are outside of the website building, though, like Ryan mentioned. There's e-commerce selling, there's payments, although they don't have a native solution, so slightly different than Shopify and Wix. There's email marketing, social media tools, and more. So adding all those together, the say, quote-unquote, total addressable market here is definitely larger than just the website building stuff. However, the website building, as we'll talk about, there is plenty of market share to gain from WordPress itself. WordPress has maintained 50% plus of the CMS market for the last decade. So again, I'll say that again, WordPress has 50% plus market share of the content management system space, and they've had that for the last decade. It's been pretty stable. However, there are signs that Shopify, Squarespace, and Wix, especially those three, are finally making meaningful market share gains. And we've actually seen WordPress slightly decline its market share in 2022. And if you look at the table, so again, we'll have a source for this in the newsletter for kind of tracks over the years, the market share, and it's some third-party estimates. So again, it might not be exact, but it's directionally correct. So from 2011 to now, so about 10 years, Shopify went from 0% to 6% market share. Wix went from 0% to 3.5% market share, and Squarespace went from 0% to 2.9%. So basically 3% market share. Ryan, you have something to add?
Yeah, and you mentioned WordPress has maintained 50% plus of the CMS market, and it makes it sound kind of steady, but it's worth noting that CMS market is, or websites built using CMS is also growing as a percentage of active websites. So WordPress itself is actually growing active websites. It's just potentially here, we think it's going to decline in market share among that growing industry.
Yeah. And if, again, I said that, you know, 0 to 6%, 0 to 3.5%, and 0 to 3%, you add that together, that's the 12.5%, right, of market share gains from these companies that had zero. So they went from 0 to 12.5%. If they can say double that over the next 5 years and go to 25%, the only place they're going to be able to take that is WordPress. So again, if the trends over the last decade continue, you know, they're going to, someone like Squarespace is going to gain more share. And we'll talk about maybe any reasons why that won't continue towards the end of the episode. If we look at competitors, we already discussed them. There's Wix, GoDaddy, WordPress, Shopify, BigCommerce. You also have GoDaddy in domains. There's MailChimp in marketing, Sprout Social for social media management, OpenTable for, say, that restaurant management stuff, and a various other products. But the key competitors that they're going to be looking at are WordPress, Wix, GoDaddy, Shopify. All right, let's move into management and ownership. As Ryan mentioned, the founder, CEO, and chairperson of the board is Anthony Casalena. Is that how you say it? Casalena. He's only 39 years old, so pretty young for someone that's run this business for a long time. He has 75% voting power. So again, combine that with 75% voting power. He is the CEO and chairperson of the board. He has, I think, the trifecta of total control of this entity. There's not really any holes in that. It seems like he would have to just want to give it up to leave. The board of directors has a very standard makeup, so nothing crazy there. They're executives from the technology industry of Wayfair, Getty Images. Getty Images actually has some sort of partnership with them. And as Ryan mentioned, they have a longstanding relationship. And then there's a lot of VC partners on the board. So those ones that Ryan mentioned, like XL Ventures, a few others. But in total, there are only 6 members of the board. Total board compensation was 0.2% of 2021 gross profits. So no complications there. If we look at the ownership table, though, there are a lot of VC funds still associated with the stock, but that is really not too relevant. I guess maybe from the stock could go down if there's a lot of selling pressure if they want to get rid of their stake, but it's not too relevant, again, because Casalena still has full control of this thing from a voting power perspective. Lastly, on management and ownership, let's go through executive compensation. I would say they have a fairly simple scheme. They do base salaries and then they give out executive stock options. If we look at total executive compensation in 2021, it was $88 million or 13.4% of 2021 gross profit. However, you know, at first glance, you think, okay, that's way, way too high and something's wrong. They're kind of paying themselves too much. However, this was due to the company starting a long-term stock award for Casalena based on stock price tranches that all had to be realized at the time of the compensation plan. So it wasn't actually true expenses in this regard. Most of the time, the SBC, they might try to, there's no adjusted EBITDA nonsense here, but basically they gave him like a, you know, kind of like a Tesla-based one where they have these stock price targets. And then if you hit the stock price target for, say, I think it was a 30-day or 90-day moving average, you get this certain tranche of stock options that'll vest for you, these performance stock units. And if we look at the stock price today, it's about $20 a share. And the first hurdle is $105 a share, with the last hurdle being $420 a share. I pasted the table in to the newsletter for anyone to look at. On the one hand, I get a little bit mad that he's paying himself so much, even though he owns 35% of the economic interest of this thing. So he's already incentivized to get the stock price up. But on the other hand, it's not really that bad because he's only going to get paid if the stock does really well for shareholders. So that does somewhat align him. But again, he already was aligned. But if you're looking at, say, the 2021 numbers, that's why the expenses look so bad. Let's see. Besides that, we got nothing. So let's move on to earnings, Ryan. What do the financials of this company look like?
Well, the financials look pretty good, especially, I guess it's similar to GoDaddy, but the at least on a profitability basis, it looks better than Wix, which we'll talk about at the end of this month. So over the last 12 months, they've done just under $1 billion in revenue. So $846 million. That was up 13% versus the 12 months prior. 83% gross margins. So they generate, as a percentage of their own revenue, they generate more from their core subscription business than Wix, which is generally higher margin than the commerce solutions, not to mention the commerce solutions are a little different than Wix. But ultimately, it's a slightly higher margin business on a gross basis. And then a lot of that trickles through to free cash flow. So $127 million in free cash flow, that's 15% free cash flow margins. That's over the last 12 months. And it's been improving, or it's expected to improve this year. So most recent quarter, when we talk about what's kind of happening now, they have $218 million in total revenue. That was growing at 8% a year due to two things. So unique subscriptions reached 4.2 million, which grew 4%. Although it was flat sequentially, so it's not growing quite as quickly on a quarter-over-quarter basis as it used to, and that's been kind of across the entire CMS space. Website growth has stalled out a little bit. And then the average revenue per unique subscription is also up 4%. So, and there's also some constant currency, there are some foreign currency headwinds as well, although not quite as much. So only about 30% of their business is done outside of the U.S., total bookings increased 10%, would have been 14% in constant currency. Commerce revenue was growing year over year, but primarily because of the Tock acquisition. So they paid $400 million for this online ordering and reservation system called Tock. But if you exclude that, GMV for their commerce segment, actually, I'm pretty sure it actually declined year over year. So a lot of that is kind of just macro, but also likely some sort of reversion from COVID trends, where maybe some businesses that were conducting more sales online, I'm thinking particularly with the restaurants, are some of those transactions have migrated back to in person. There wasn't a whole lot of color on it, but that would be my guess. And then this quarter specifically, just over $41 million in operating cash flow. So that's 19% operating cash flow margin. That was actually down last year due to, and they said, timing of payments. And this was asked about.
That's by definition. So, yes.
It was asked about on the conference call. And it was kind of a number of things, but basically, I believe a lot of it had to do with like this tax receivables not coming in. And then they also front loaded some marketing costs that weren't going to actually occur until later on. So lumpy, but ultimately you're looking at about historically 15 to 20% cash flow margin business. There isn't a whole lot of CapEx here. It's pretty light. So free cash flow is generally pretty close to their operating cash flow figure. They do, however, issue a lot of stock-based compensation. But they have been buying back as well. So I'll talk about that in a sec. But $75 million in stock-based compensation year to date. If you just annualize that, we're looking at about $100 million given out in stock each this year. But in the second quarter, they authorized a $200 million buyback. And so far, repurchases have outpaced SBC. In total, they're guiding for 100. I guess the two numbers you probably didn't know, just under $1 billion in revenue and $840 million, and they're guiding for $140 million in free cash flow this year, roughly. So right around 15 to 20% free cash flow margins, and those have been slightly expanding over time.
Yeah, but a lot of it is SBC at the moment as they continue to invest for growth. So something to watch.
Yeah, and that might become a little bit more of a material cost here as we talk about the balance sheet. So $230 million in cash and liquid securities on the balance sheet. It's a pretty healthy amount, but $520 million in total debt. However, it's a variable rate, and $30 million of it is current. So most of this is all due in 2025, but it's LIBOR. So the London Interchange Bank overnight rate, banking overnight rate, something like that. Basically, the London, the equivalent of the London 10-year is maybe the way to say it, right?
No,
funds rate.
No, that is incorrect.
Slightly lower.
No, it's just We don't need to go into it. It's close on the rate,
is it not?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. It might track it close, but it's not, it has nothing to do with it. But yeah, it's just banking. What the banks are able to lend at, kind of. They just average it out. It's a weird system. We don't need to go into it on this podcast. But yeah, it'll LIBOR will go up as interest rates rise. So yeah.
All right. Naive take on my part, but essentially, it's going to rise if the federal funds rate rises.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's the most important thing. Yeah.
Anyway, they entered into this term loan in 2019 for $350 million. Then they upsized it in 2020 to $550 million. Mm. The effective rate at the end of the last quarter was 4.63%. If rates continue to rise, as we kind of mentioned there, you should expect that effective rate to also rise. I didn't see any hedges in place or interest rate swaps or anything like that. So it's sort of your typical floating rate debt where if rates, you know, you took on the risk that if general rates rise, your payments or interest payments will as well. So on top of that, the debt has some conditions that Squarespace can't have a total debt. And they say total debt to EBITDA ratio greater than 4.5 times. And then it kind of steps down over time to 3.75. But total debt, kind of, you could probably just look at it on a net debt to EBITDA basis because they could theoretically pay the debt down early if they wanted to with that cash. So the way I would look at it is that net debt to adjusted EBITDA, or they report an unlevered free cash flow, which I imagine is close to however the banks are assessing that EBITDA figure. Net debt to adjusted EBITDA right now is about 2.4 times. So not too crazy, but my concern here is that it's going to be harder to buy back stock the closer you get to 2025 if rates rise, because then you're spending more money towards interest payments. And there's just less flexibility to use that cash, less cash available to be repurchasing. So that's why I say you may want to pay attention to at least where that SBC is trending.
Yes. Yeah, that was a big, we're going to compare ish Wix versus Squarespace later. And I think the balance sheet, Wix has a big advantage there, although neither of them are perfect. All right, I'll hit valuation quick. Pretty simple with this one. Let me pull up my metrics. Let me make sure that's the right one, because we're doing this kind of at the same time as GoDaddy. Okay, yes, Squarespace charts and metrics. All right, I have two here. Well, first off, market cap's about, for anyone that's referencing, about 2.8 billion, 2.78 billion. Add back the net debt, we get an enterprise value of right around 3.1 billion. So kind of just $3 billion EV. If we look at EV to gross profit on a trailing 12-month basis, we're at 4.4. Not cheap in that regard, but pretty darn close to the market average, I would say. And then if we look at EV to free cash flow, it's 24.2. But remember, majority of that is SBC. So again, it's not cheap, I would say. There are... You know, they're going to grow free cash flow per share, right? Because that share count is coming down. But we did talk about those concerns around how much money they're going to have to be able to deploy into the buyback. And then second, they are still investing a lot for growth. So I think my most important metric, at least in the near term, would be EV to gross profit, most likely, because with the long-term tailwind that they're, you know, they've theorized, you know, we possibly, you know, somewhat agree with, or at least part of the thesis with the website builders, is that there will be this long-term opportunity to steal market share from WordPress. They're going to have to spend on marketing and sales. They're going to have to continue on R&D to stay up to speed with Wix and Shopify for the stuff that they compete with. I guess they're not going for the crazy e-commerce stuff that they want to compete with in there. But again, EV to gross profit is probably my preferred metric there. But let's move on to Ryan. You have something to add for valuation?
Yeah, and I'll just, I was scrolling through some of the history on the business before the show, and they used to have a private market valuation, I believe, at $10 billion. So
really? Wow. Well, the VC market,
surprising.
The VCs, yeah, it's not. Well, is it surprising?
It's, well, maybe not, but it's kind of cool to look at how much how rationalized some of these valuations have come in. So, or how far they've come in. I mean, 80% drawdown versus the private, well, 70% drawdown versus private valuation, which I don't think. Let me see.
You want to see what year that was? Yeah. And they used to be trading at 12, 13 times sales then in that regard. And now they're down to an EV of about $3 billion, which gives them, we're probably going to get down to about 3-4 times gross profit here very shortly with this current multiple. But let's move on to anecdotal evidence. I can just do mine if you're looking that up, Ryan. So with these, you know, we built some website ourselves, so we knew that Squarespace was a good option. It was definitely one. I mean, we chose Wix. It's kind of a toss-up. They both have fairly similar numbers, as we'll go over with Wix. Squarespace is just slightly smaller. But when you visit its product website, so say you go to squarespace.com and are checking out all the stuff they have, you understand right away what Squarespace offers. When you look up Squarespace on Google, the first pop-up on Google is, you know, the things you read first are website builder, create a website in minutes with a link to its homepage at Squarespace. I think that's good because, you know, with a competitor like GoDaddy or maybe those jumbled WordPress things, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you're going to get confused. And with Squarespace or Wix, which are essentially very similar in this regard, you're not, I think it's much easier to understand what you're getting into. And it says, okay, create a website in minutes, boom, they'll have these templates for me. I can create this thing in a day, which is kind of what we did with one of ours. I also like to look at the Google search stuff for advertising. Because that's super important for these, because that's basically what people are doing. You know, I searched build a website, which I think millions and millions of people do.
That's specifically what Casalina said they would buy Google AdWords on when they first started.
Exactly. So that's pretty competitive, and they're still doing that because Squarespace was the first ad for me that pops up. So it's interesting in that regard where, on the one hand, it's kind of a commodity where you have all these listings on Google search or wherever you're searching, and it's going to be Wix, Squarespace, GoDaddy. But WordPress is not going to advertise there because they're open source. So I think that's where part of the advantage is, where these companies are competing for customers, but since there's such a large tailwind, it can be kind of rational. And since WordPress is open source, they can have a much more tailored approach to what kind of the SEO strategy in that regard. All right, I'm going too long on that. Ryan, any anecdotal evidence to add, or do you kind of have similar stuff?
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is I would say this is sort of the top website builder when it comes to design. I think it just maybe looks a little nicer, which is probably why it lends itself well to kind of the photography, the wedding planners, the portfolio style people. If that's like your top priority, yeah, I don't think it is quite as good in terms of business functionality as some of the other website builders, especially Shopify and Wix. But if design's sort of your big thing, then this is probably a really good, this is probably the go-to platform for those kind of people. I would say also, I mentioned the private market valuation. That was 2021. So
right before they went public.
Yeah, they raised at that round or that valuation.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that also makes sense that they're investing, if it's kind of the design stuff, they're investing in the social media tools as well, which I think is quite smart. All right, let's move to future growth opportunities. Ryan, you have the Tock acquisition.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure this would be like where I think they'll generate some of their growth moving forward, but they spent a lot of money on it. So it almost makes me feel like I have to have this here because $400 million in a mix of cash and stock, they made this sort of right at the heart of maybe a little delayed post COVID, but it was at a time when restaurants really needed this solution. And so basically Tock competes sort of with OpenTable. So, restaurants pay $199 a month and they use Tock as their reservation system. They can also process online orders. They got really popular when they launched Tock to Go, which was their online ordering and pickup curbside pickup kind of offering for restaurants. That's really when they saw a lot of growth. And then obviously COVID was a big tailwind for them because restaurants needed this kind of solution. But to me, it feels like they kind of just bought this at like just the peak of online restaurant orders. And maybe that's a trend that will continue over time. And it's like a slowdown now, but
could they have acquired it for $100 million right now? Yeah.
That to me, it's both a concern. And then also, I know restaurants is kind of a big market or customer market for them. So it's good that they have a little bit of a better service offering for them, but it's concerning that maybe they do this again at a time when, at an inopportune time, I should say.
Yeah. And I think it'll work out if customers and ARPU continue to climb, because this should be something for the restaurant tier that can really, really help ARPU, but we will see. All right. Mine is going to be the classic one that everyone is focused on. And that is growth in commerce. So as with Wix and GoDaddy, I think Squarespace likely saw how much Shopify had grown with its, you know, Arm of the Rebels, the software behind the e-commerce to compete with Amazon approach with e-commerce and payments for online businesses. I think Squarespace is definitely trying to replicate that. We don't need to think about that. They say that. And they now offer a ton of e-commerce tools for its website builders. Last quarter, they did $1.4 billion in GMV through the platform, up 3% year over year. Again, though, like Ryan mentioned, some of that was inorganic because of Tock, right? Is that what you were saying earlier? It's really important what that number looks like, I think, a year from now. But for reference, so Squarespace did $1.4 billion in GMV. Shopify did $46 billion over that same time period. So I think you can either read that as bullish or bearish. One, there's a giant opportunity, right? Within these Arm the Rebels stuff, there's not just going to be Amazon that rules everything. But two, Shopify is such a lead in this space that I wonder if they're just going to become a winner takes all. So it's tough. It's tough.
I kind of feel like they're different. The GMV mix is very different.
True. Yep.
Like a little more reservations, like different types of business than people that are shipping merchandise.
Yeah. Or like an online, a trainer. So an exercise trainer of any sort of type that uses Squarespace for their website, they can take payments for a class if, say, they travel around or they're a personal trainer or whatever it is. And that's entirely different than Shopify. You don't do that on Shopify. Shopify, by definition of the name, is for shopping online. So yeah, but here's the thing though. Why is the commerce so valuable? Is because if you get a subscriber that not only pays for the website, but uses Squarespace to facilitate transactions. And again, they aren't going to be as valuable because they don't have Squarespace payments like Shopify payments or Wix payments or GoDaddy payments, but they're going to have much, much higher lifetime values if someone is using them for their commerce. And Squarespace becomes much more valuable to that customer, and you're likely not going to churn because it can be easy to switch over, say, your website from a Squarespace to somewhere else if it only is the design part and you're like a blog or you have nothing else except for people, some things to read and then contact for whatever type of business you are. But if you're doing your actual business through Squarespace or a good percentage of it, it is a giant risk to leave them because you don't know what's going to go wrong. So I think that's very bullish for them and the website builders in general. But let's move to highlights and lowlights. I think we're going to have similar ones here, Ryan. So why don't you go and then I'll hit any that you don't have.
Yeah, highlights for me. Squarespace has always kind of had a focus on profitable growth. We've seen some companies in the CMS space that are less fixated on that, but that's really been their focus even since the early days. And management has made it clear that that's going to continue. That's sort of a... They explicitly state that in their conference calls. Second one for me, and I already kind of mentioned this, I do think they've carved out a pretty strong niche among end markets that are focused on design first, especially the non-merchant types. So, you know, the photographers, wedding planners, those kind of customers. And then the last one is just the industry tailwinds. We've talked about this time and time again, but more and more people, especially the non-technical people, are building websites themselves. And Squarespace has a well-known brand within the do-it-yourself space. So I think there is going to be plenty of top of the funnel customers coming to them over time. Low lights for me, though, I think the Tock acquisition kind of scares me. It bolsters their offering, I'm sure, for restaurants, but it seems poorly timed. And it worries me that maybe they're going to, like, I'm all for them building out solutions to help their customers and maybe even buying small solutions and then upselling it to their big customer base. But $400 million is a big deal. I mean, that's 4 years worth of cash flow. At the current rate, roughly 3 years, whatever. I don't know. That's kind of concerning. I don't think Tock was worth that, at least not from what we've seen so far in terms of how they've improved the financials. Other lowlights for me, floating rate debt, big chunk of that's due mostly in 2025. So if they see a rise in rates, it's going to inhibit their ability to invest in other things. So it's just, you know, I wish they would have raised on fixed rate debt. I honestly don't see why they didn't try to do that. I know that's hindsight, but you're not taking advantage of low rate environments by buying variable rate debt. So that, and it seems like they were taking on debt to, because it was sort of an opportunistic time. Maybe it was to finance that Tock acquisition. Maybe that's why they upsized it, but, I don't know. It feels like it was a poor decision. Obviously, I have the benefit of seeing that rates have risen. So maybe not fair for me to say. Last one, I'm not 100% sold on Castellana. He does control the ship. It's hard to describe why, but I just kind of got that gut feel listening to that interview where it felt... it's impossible feeling to describe. I didn't feel like he was necessarily the perfect capital allocation partner, which is what you're looking for with management.
Yeah. It's hard to kind of got to judge management. It's hard to do that. You just kind of listen and say, do I trust them if you don't meet them or if they haven't been in the public markets that long.
On the flip side, I do like that he has tried to go at it with a lean approach like that. Those first couple of years where he's like, we can do this without having to hire it. It's nice in terms of it shows that there's a focus on profitability, but at the same time, they gave up. There are companies that started much later than them, Shopify and Wix, that have eaten their lunch, maybe because they didn't invest enough.
Yeah. Yeah. They've stalled out a bit on the market share. If you look at those over the last couple of years, Wix has done a little bit better. It's interesting, yeah. I don't know what to think about that. I think it's something investors need to consider a lot, though. All right, my highlights have the same as you. Like, you know, their profitable growth, CMS stuff. There should be that tailwind. But just generally, the business model, I think, is attractive to me, where you have a combination of one, fantastic unit economics, two, recurring revenue, and three, pricing power due to the high switching costs and the fact that the value the website builders are providing versus the cost of a website builder each year is low right now versus, you know, the difference is huge. I think that generally they're about $200 a year across the industry. So I think that could raise to $400 over the next decade and no one would bat an eye. So that combination of one, fantastic unit economics, recurring revenue, and then the pricing power make website builders like Squarespace just extremely attractive to me.
I'm not sure why there's this narrative that content management systems are bad businesses.
That's fine. You should be happy. That means there's
opportunity. I know. I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's competitive, but I feel like the lifetime value is really high when you attract a user.
The downside is the commodity-ish stuff. But again, there is a little bit of scale if you can offer so many more features to someone, which there are a ton that a small business needs when building an online business. And they can't do any of it in-house. My lowlights, though, besides the ones you had, yeah, I had Talk and I had the Castellana. Basically, dictatorship here as a bit of a lowlight. The other one I had, though, is that they relate to the game at e-commerce and online payments, and they don't even have their internal payment solution, which as it's expensive to build out, and the margins are going to be low at the start. So I don't know if they're ever going to do that. But I worry that similar to Wix and GoDaddy, Squarespace will lose a lot of customers to Shopify that are e-commerce focused, and a lot of them are e-commerce focused. I don't think it's a failure like we discussed before, given the size of the market opportunity. There can be winners in either space. Shopify will be a winner, and then, you know, Squarespace can also be a winner, but annual GMV might be lower than investors expected a few years from now. Maybe that lower than investors expected back when they raised at a $10 billion valuation. Maybe not now at a $3 billion valuation, but we'll see. All right, bull case. Let's wrap things up, Ryan. What do you see here, valuation versus kind of what you need to go right if you're thinking of in buying this thing?
Yeah, I think the good thing about these businesses is it's pretty easy to understand the drivers. Commerce complicates things a little bit, but ultimately it's pretty easy to understand the drivers. So I think they have to grow unique subscriptions at 10% plus over the next several years. It's come down a little bit post COVID, but their 3-year CAGR has been 16%. So I do think they can do that. I also think that they need to increase their average revenue per subscription. That's going to come through a combination of both price increases, and they've been a little more reluctant to do price increases compared to some of the other companies. But so price increases, and then probably more commerce revenue per subscriber as well. And then they're able to maintain 20% free cash flow margins. I know that's kind of a big one. I think it's doable.
Oh, easy. And with their SBC levels, it should be able to go higher.
Yeah, and they're basically at that right now. Sometimes it floats under, but generally around that level. And then if those three things happen, they'd be generating, if we assume so, 5% growth in average revenue per sub, 10% plus, at a minimum, you've got 15% revenue growth, then 20% free cash flow margins. You're looking at more than $250 million in free cash flow within 3 years at 15 times free cash flow, which I think
it's a haircut from here.
Yeah. It's reasonable, certainly reasonable in a bull case. You've got just under a $4 billion market cap, which is within 3 years, that's upside from here. That's more than a 10% return.
Yep.
Annually.
Yeah. Unless that SBC comes in so aggressively, although I don't think it wouldn't all be SBC for that market cap expansion. Mine's similar. I think it's very simple. They continue to gain market share versus WordPress, driving a steady growth of new customers to their business, which is a continuation of what they've done over the last decade. And then ARPU steadily grows through the adoption of commerce tools and price increases. It's very, very simple. Revenue grows at 10% plus a year, and then you have consistent operating leverage due to the strong gross margins. Again, you need the capital discipline, though, because we're going to talk about Wix. The big downside with Wix is they haven't had the capital discipline over the last couple of years. While we looked at someone like GoDaddy with the capital discipline, just the spending discipline, as they've grown, you've seen they've been able to grow like that. If Squarespace can put up something similar, they can probably have even better margins. At the current EV to gross profit multiple of 4.4, if they end up converting a lot of that to cash eventually, I think the stock would be very, very cheap. Bear case though, Ryan, what do you think?
So, well, for one, I think the debt's put them in a precarious spot. So, short term,
not a bankruptcy one, but just more of a flexibility, right?
Yeah, and so I guess here's the problem. So short term, I could see some elevated churn. You know, you look at the GMV numbers, that means unless it's more just everything moving to in-person transactions, there was an unreal amount of small business starts and website making going on during COVID, which you can, if you look at the charts, it accelerated during COVID and has since tapered off. If you start to see some lagging churn, so companies that are like, they subscribed during COVID, but they haven't had the chance to renew and now they're not going to renew, or whatever, the businesses have failed, that kind of thing. Maybe net subscription ads slows or even declines for a little bit. I mean, we're seeing sequentially flat. So if you see that, there's a chance that they're going to see some compression on like the top line. On top of that, if rates rise at the same time, you've got increased interest expenses with kind of compressing top line, and then you're going to have to roll that debt.
Double whammy too on how rising the economy would be hurt, and that could impact their net adds. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're rolling that debt, they're probably gonna have to do it at more expensive rates too. So, I don't know. It's just, I think there's a possibility that free cash, and then you've got, then SBC is more dilutive when they're not using that excess cash to buy back. So maybe free cash flow per share grows at a pretty slow rate in that scenario.
Yep. All right. My bear case is just inverting the big thesis around non-WordPress build website builders gaining share in WordPress. I said die last episode, but again, it's going to take many, many years for that to happen given their dominance in the marketplace. But that's the big thesis, is that they continue to take customers from them as the website builder industry just grows in general. If that doesn't happen, because of that, yeah, there's still some growth reflected in the stock price, right? Expectations for growth. If that doesn't happen, and for some reason that trend stops, and Squarespace only grows customers by, say, low single digits each year, along with the overall website builder market, I don't think the stock would do well. And the floor seems fairly high, unless they make some terrible missteps as an executive team. But if I just worry that the stock could be stuck at these levels if they don't grow enough and there is some competition out there. So you, I think, have to be pretty darn confident that the WordPress is going to lose market share over the next decade if Squarespace is going to do well. All right. More or less interested, Ryan, let's close things up.
More interested. I do think they'll gain market share. I worry a little bit about the valuation here and just some of the decisions they've made. And I was kind of bummed out to see the balance sheet, but I am more interested. If there's some sort of steep sell-off, this is something that'll be on my, it is on my watch list already. So it'll kind of move up, I guess.
Yep, I'm interested as well. The business model seems sound to me. I don't think management is bad. I didn't see any big red flags or anything like that. They're not too tested in the public markets. It's only been about a year or so. So I think that's something that I will want to see. But yeah, the business model is very sound, and I think there's a long-term tailwind. So what more could you ask for? All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Next week, we're doing BigCommerce, which is a Shopify competitor, I believe, although we'll have to figure it out ourselves. And then after that, we'll be covering Wix to close out the year. That's going to do it for this episode. Remember, we are not financial advisors. Anything we say on the show is not formal advice or recommendation. We are general partners at Arch Capital, and clients may hold securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.